I think it's down to when we allow everything to be as it is, and really allowing everything to be as it is, then we experience everything. We are not trying to escape from different kind of experiences. That is, in one sense, experiencing all of your life.
That was Axel Wenhall, the PR consultant turned meditation coach. To make meditation even more accessible for the Swedish-speaking population, he created the Swedish meditation app Mindfully, as well as the podcast Meditera Mera. In addition to this, he recently authored the book Meditation, ett inre äventyr, Meditation, the Adventure Within, really translated. Due to his passion for the outdoors and belief that present moment awareness is easier found in nature, he created Breathe In, a company arranging combined meditation and adventure travels. After 12 scientific episodes where we have learned a lot about how the brain and the mind works and the possibilities that lie within, I now want to explore how this science can explain or be applied to daily life. In this very first episode of the series, we talk about being human, life's struggles and joys, and meditation. Why do we struggle with ourselves and accepting reality as is? What can present moment awareness teach us, and how can we reach it? Everyone has a unique past, a unique perspective, and a unique experience of life. Listening to someone else's thoughts, reflections, and wisdom can both inspire us and feel comforting at the same time. This is Brain Observations Podcast, the human experience.
Really cool to have you here. I'm so excited that you're coming here for the first episode of the human experience, a new series of the Brain Observations Podcast.
Thanks for being here.
So how have you been feeling lately?
I'm great. It's September, 1st of September when we're recording this. Autumn is coming here in Stockholm and slowly getting back, but I still have some holidays left. So that's great. And we got our first daughter here a year ago, and now we're waiting our second child. So it's a lot of family and mixing up with a lot of interesting work as well, and some vacations. So I'm in a good place.
A lot of exciting things. Plus the weather is quite nice now.
Yeah.
For this episode, there's really no roadmap. I just want to learn more about the human experience, talk to people about how they perceive things, how they think about things. So I wanted to ask you, what do you think people struggle with in life?
I think most of us people, we struggle with ourselves. And what I mean with ourselves is our thoughts, our self-images, our ideas, our sub-personalities. Yeah, there seems to be a voice or different kind of voices, different kind of patterns that we human have. And when we are unconscious of those, when we aren't aware of the thoughts we have, that they are actually just thoughts, life seems to be quite difficult, quite stressing. I mean, that's probably one of the definitions of suffering, I would say. And at least for myself, of course, there are periods. I just told you that I'm quite a new father. That's been very challenging. But when I can fully accept and embrace and allow the situation to be as it is, it seems to just flow much, much easier.
Yeah.
But when I add the thought, it shouldn't be like this, a lot of additional pain, what I would call suffering, comes in.
To see a baby screaming as it is noise. It is loud, it is noise, but my focus is on finding out what the need is and providing safety and helping out with that need. But trying to deal with the actual noise that can pierce your eardrum in a way that is more accepting, I think. That is something I learned when having small babies at home, because you can get so on edge from the screaming, partly because your heart goes out to this little human who seems upset about something, but also because it's such an intense sensory experience that you can start feeling, I don't want this. Yeah. I want it to be different than what it is.
Yeah, I think you're addressing something really important there. And that's that when we care for people, for each other, for the world, for the climate, whatever it is we care for, it hurts. Love has this kind of bittersweet texture to it. You can't love without feeling pain. It just doesn't go. Like, if you really care for someone, and I think being a parent has really showed me just that. If you really care, it's going to hurt. Because that's where empathy comes in. But that's okay. And I think that's also something that I've more and more experienced and experiment with, to understand that the pain, either if it's sorrow or just empathy as we spoke about, or the feeling of want to helping out, is that it comes from love. And to be able to feel that feeling, to feel that pain, be with that pain, instead of trying to push that away. I would also say that that is really one of the most interesting and profound experiences or insights you can have. Because then you can also be fully engaged with the people you love, instead of a kind of like disassociation from the situation. Because it seems to me, at least in my own experience, and to the people I know, that we want to feel as much pleasant experiences and sensations, and we want to try to get rid of the unpleasant. And if it's neutral, we pick up the phone. So for me, meditation has been this ongoing process, this ongoing learning to, wait a minute, what happens if I stay with the unpleasant? What happens if I stay with the neutral? And what happens if I don't try to hold on to the pleasant too much? I'm not always chasing the pleasant. Doesn't mean that, of course, like, we want to have pleasant experiences. Not that, but more always chasing the pleasant. Because that seems to be an impossible job.
So what happens to you when you do that? When you try to just sit with the with the pain or the emotion or the present or the boredom?
Yeah. It seems that my experience is that I feel more alive. I feel more attentive to life. It feels like, if I'm describing myself as a piano, I can play on all the piano boards. Is it called piano boards? Rather than just some. I get the full human experience. And in that full human experience, where every emotion is allowed, where I'm able to be and feel, it comes, there's something, it has the experience has a richer texture. There's something rich to it.
Well, do you think that is because you're allowing yourself to actually fully feel what you are feeling? Or do you think it has to do more with acceptance? That all of these things are parts of being human, and therefore you feel like this is a fuller experience because I'm actually experiencing things that are part of being human?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's down to when we allow everything to be as it is, and really allowing everything to be as it is, then we experience everything. We are not trying to escape from different kind of experiences. And I mean, that is in one sense experiencing all of your life. And for me, that's also the main, I would say, like, what is meditation and what's the purpose of meditation? To really experience all of your life. To be able to be present in all phases of life. That's, for me, the true purpose of meditation.
Because often we try to bend reality into what we want it to be. Like, we have this view of, this is how I want my life to be, this is how I want my world to be. And we fight so hard to only have happy emotions and to have things in a certain way. What are your thoughts on that?
That it's very human to do it. And that I think it's a good thing in one sense. I think the problem comes because there is a difference between having a goal or perhaps wanting to create a happy life with as many pleasant experiences or feelings as possible. The problem comes when we are stuck in that expectation or that goal or that hope, perhaps. When we can't allow the experience to be whatever it is. So I think that's the issue, like, because who wouldn't want to be happy? Who wouldn't want to enjoy life as much as possible? But it seems that when we actually allow everything to be as it is, when we see that all experiences that we have is changing, they're impermanent, that also gives us an insight into that almost whatever, wherever we are, we can be in that kind of state of okayness. And that is a kind of state of peace, I would say. So, for example, from my own experience was that I really chased the kind of peak experiences. And I was planning and I was hoping to do them. And there was nothing wrong with that. I had so many great experiences. But when I reflect back, it seems that I wasn't really present during the period when I was kind of waiting to have the next peak experience.
Mm. So in between those, you were living for those moments rather than having those moments in your life.
Yeah. And I think that's quite common for us people. We long for the holidays. We long for the weekend. We long for quitting the job and going home. So we're in this kind of, in one way, a kind of trap where we're thinking of what's coming next. But if we have our attention too much on our thoughts and doesn't really realize that, wait a minute, I am paying attention to my thoughts about the future rather than fully engaging in the here and now, then that kind of transport period, which is of course not a transport period, it's life. It's where everything happens. But it can becomes a bit dull, boring. It can becomes a bit, this kind of waiting period. You're waiting for life to start.
Mm.
So I think that's also was also one of the insights. Wait a minute, I don't want to wait for life to start. How can I, if I engage with whatever I'm doing, what happens to my experience? What happens to this moment if I can fully engage with it? And with that said, it's not easy. It's not easy to fully engage when you're playing 4 hours with your one-year-old kid. Or if you're having a job that you perhaps aren't fully happy with or whatever it is. Or if you have a difficult conversation with a colleague or a friend or your partner. It's not easy.
No.
But it is possible to practice and become better. So I think that's also one of the things that I love with just having the kind of more formal meditation practice. It prepares me for those moments.
Because you train the mind to actually be able to be present so that you can use that skill then in those moments.
Yeah, so for the formal practice of meditation, I would usually have a few basic guidelines.
Hmm?
One is to have the intention to be fully present and experience rather than think about the experience. And then when I realize I get lost, which I do.
Which we do.
Which we all do.
All the time.
You start over again. You simply begin again. Like not adding anything, just begin again. And the kind of third instruction would be to just allow everything to be as it is. And I would say like to try to be is not even the right phrasing. I would say to be as open as possible and just let everything come and go. And kind of just relax into that open space where everything comes and goes. And in that kind of relaxation, there's also some kind of engaging in the activity or in the kind of experience without me being such a big part of it. It's just, everything is just happening by its own. And so it's in one way becoming more harmonious with the environment around you and inside you, and in one way to see that the inside and outside is just a seamless flow. And that kind of connection to the present moment, to the here and now, enables me to have more difficult conversations, to be authentic and honest when I need to engage more in the more so-called boring situations.
Mm.
So I see meditation as this practice for life rather than sitting down. And even though it can be very useful to explore the mind and the nature of mind, but rather than, okay, well, if I practice 20 minutes of meditation in the morning, for example, how can it be beneficial for the rest of the day? That's how I look at it.
Mm. And you mentioned vacation. I've had a thought that we long for vacation and we imagine ourselves there and we imagine ourselves in the future in different situations. We're in this, just when we have this new apartment or I have this new job. And I was thinking about what is it that is so incredibly alluring about that? And then when we're actually there, it's not that amazing. And I think it's because in our mind, we're so relaxed when we're there. We're completely just present, enjoying the moment. We're not stressed out about any of the responsibilities that we have. I think what we're actually looking for is not so much the vacation itself. It's a feeling of being relaxed, of not feeling caught up in all the coulda, woulda, shoulda, everything you need to do, all the responsibilities you have, the daily grind, your own anxieties. We have this image that when I am there, I'm going to be calm. And I think that is what we want.
Yeah, I see it in a similar way. And I see the calm and the relaxing comes as a kind of side effect from that you are present. That you are just allowing yourself to just be present in a state of more of a being rather than doing. And obviously a vacation helps with that.
Because you're detached from the daily grind.
Yeah, because exactly. Because, I mean, for most of us, work is to-do lists, deadlines.
Schedules.
Many of us have bosses or colleagues. And it's different. Like, I mean, it's complicated because there's a lot of relationships going on. And then, of course, in our society, we also need to manage our work with our personal life and our own ambitions, what we want to do on our leisure time. So it all gets intertwined and mixed up in there. And vacation, of course, it's a perfect way because you can actually relax from work. But one interesting thing could also be to explore that. But when I'm at work and when I'm just at work and when I'm just working with whatever I'm doing and I'm fully engaged in that, aren't that also the kind of same feeling we're after when we're on holiday? Like that presence, when the kind of default patterns about what we should do, what we have to do, kind of relaxes back in the background or perhaps even vanishes for a bit. When you asked me in the beginning, what are we people struggling with? Ourselves. So it seems like when we are engaged in an activity, if we're working, for example, we forget about ourselves for a while. And that seems to be a nice experience for us people. So I agree with you, but I see it as present being what we long for. And the more present we can be, even in the more challenging situations, the happier we become.
And you wrote in your book that meditation is about learning to become you, yourself.
Yeah.
How do you think about that?
So the definition of you or me, it's a tricky slope to go into. But but perhaps a kind of simple way to look at it is that when I'm fully present, then I am myself. So if I can be present here with you, and if I don't have any thoughts that consist of fears of me doing stuff or being wrong or whatever it might be, I can relax. I can relax and I can be myself. I can be open, I can be honest, I can be vulnerable. So those kind of attributes comes naturally when I'm present. But when I'm kind of identified with a thought pattern telling me, oh, I shouldn't have said this, or I shouldn't be like that, or oh, how is my clothes looking today? All those kind of self-reflective thoughts. Then I'm identified with a kind of certain thought that I had in my mind. And for me, at least, I would say that was my awakening in terms of I had so many ideas of who I was. So always in my life since I was a child, I've been having this idea that I have to be good, kind, trying to succeed. And when I was about almost turning 30, I think I was 29, I realized for the first time in my life, wait a minute, there's something in me that can actually be witnessed, can be aware of this thought pattern that tells me how I should be. So if I can be aware of this thought pattern of always trying to be the good guy or the kind guy, that per definition means that there must be something else, something deeper to me.
That you're behind the thinker. There's something behind the thinker.
Yeah, something aware at least of the thinker. And that was just a big revelation and also a big sense of freedom. Because I think when you have an idea of yourself, how you should be, it's always limited. It's always limited in the sense of even if you have the idea of being a superhero, like that's limited. Because the superhero, when can a superhero be sad or angry or disappointed or anything? So all those ideas we have about ourselves are limited. And I think that's also why some people feel limited or feel like stuck, because we have this idea of ourselves. So for me, when I use, oh, wait a minute, there's something here. When I am present, when I am aware, I can observe these different thoughts and these different emotions and also physical sensations that kind of like work together. And then I come to this mystery. Who am I? I have no idea. I don't know. But I do know that this thought pattern is something that I can observe, or is being observed. So, and also that when I'm just here with you, it's super nice. No, but it's a very nice place to be at.
Yeah.
Because there's no really fears, or it's okay.
It's just nice. Chill.
Yeah.
It's just chill. But you mentioned in the beginning that you think people might struggle with having a lot of sub-personalities. What do you mean when you say sub-personalities?
I should also clarify, I don't mean that we people struggle with having a lot of sub-personalities.
Nah.
We struggle when we identify with the sub-personalities.
Okay.
So a sub-personality, in my point of view, is it could be a role we play. So it could be, for example, one sub-personality that is very active in my life right now is the father. And that was a sub-personality I didn't have 13 months ago. So it's a new part of me coming in. So you can say it's a part of me who views the world in a kind of way, who thinks about things. And it's very useful because, I mean, I am a father in one way as well. But I'm not only a father. So there's a part of me, the father, but it can also be the meditation coach, or it can be the brother, or it can be the son. So there's different kinds of sub-personalities. And they seem to also have different kind of, how to say, tasks, you could say.
Mm.
Some seems to be there to protect me.
Mm.
Some seems to be there to actually make stuff happen.
Mm-hmm.
So and then it's interesting because, I mean, in different kind of psychotherapies, schools, they have different kind of ways to look at it. But for me, a sub-personality is a part of myself that I can be aware of, that has a different kind of worldview or a different kind of task.
Is it sort of the roles we assign to ourselves?
That
we have those different roles? And
yeah, that's a way to look at it, I would say, as well.
That is something I think can be a bit of a challenge, that you have so many different things you want to do in life. So you have the parent role, and a part of you just wants to be like a parent all the time. You just want to hang out with your kid all the time because they're amazing. But then you also have the work role, and if you love your job, you want to do that as well. And then you have the things you want to do on the side, your own interests, and you might have a partner maybe, and you have so many different things that are aspects of you that you want to put your time to.
Yeah.
And then it crashes. Like it collides with each other because you need to choose how to allocate time to these different things.
Yeah. And when you speak about that, for me, that's three different sub-personalities, but you can also call that three different selves, right?
Mm.
You have the working self, you have the mother self, and you have the me self, you can say, like all me and all my interests. And when you're sort of identified with those sub-personalities or those kind of roles, it seems to be a conflict, right? Because one wants to work, wants to be home. And so when you're identified with any part of the role, there's an internal conflict. But what my experience is that when you can sort of step back, settle into the present moment, and in that sense be yourself, you discover this innate wisdom. So you know, but you only know exactly when you need to know it, exactly in that moment. What should I do now? So you can't really plan for it, really. It's just more like, oh, but of course now I should go home to my kids.
Now, this is really interesting. We need to develop this a bit further so I really understand. So it's when you identify in the role of working, I need to be this. And then you look at your role in parenting and you have a different view of this is what I should be like. And then that's why it doesn't work together. Is that kind of like... Can you explain this to me again as if I'm an 8-year-old?
So... First of all, I think we should also address that we only have a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
So, of course, like, I'm not saying that all issues are down to sub-personalities.
No.
Of course not. But the internal conflict we have. seems to be when we have taken this kind of role as either the mother or the working, being at work or whatever it might be. We have this kind of, we want to do something. So we have different internal conflicts.
Mm.
And in my experience is that those are fine, those are okay. But when we can step back, when we can be aware of all those different thought patterns, because they are different thought patterns, saying, telling us in one way what we should do or want to do. In that moment, when we're stepping back, being aware of, all right, yeah, this is a conflict here between me being a mother and me also want to create a great work, for example.
Mm.
So what's right in this situation? Then we get access to ourselves, because we're not identified anymore with any certain point of view. We can step back and we can look at the picture from a kind of one way, a distance away, you can say.
Mm.
And we can ask ourselves, okay, what's the right thing? What's the best thing to do in this situation? But we can only do it right there and right then. It's not like we can get a formula and saying it's a constant kind of process where it's okay, what is right now? So this kind of wisdom always comes now. We can never really project it into the future. We need to sort of, okay, what's right now? And then, of course, from this kind of sense of, okay, what do I want to do now? We can, of course, plan into the future and say, yeah, but I actually want to be home with my kids one day a week. Perfect. That's what I want to do. So it is, in action, is pretty simple and we all experience it. But it's more that we tend to have those internal conflicts. And when we have them, we don't realize that, wait a minute, now I'm caught here. I'm caught being one of the subpersonalities. Wait a minute, can I step back and just reflect a bit and pause and see, okay, what's the best here? And I would say that's also one of the benefits of meditation, to have this possibility to stop and reflect and you see, okay, what's the right thing to do now?
Because you mentioned in your book as well that it takes a lot of energy to live in resistance, to resist things in life. And that when you stop doing that, you actually have more energy and you have maybe also a clearer mind to actually make decisions based on that.
Yeah.
Do you think we live a lot in resistance?
This is a really tricky question because I don't really know who other people lives, really. But I think resistance is this one of these unconscious things that we humans do, which is just crazy. And I am super crazy. So much I resist. If you think about it, we resist what is.
Yeah.
I think it was Eckhart Tolle who said, what could be more futile than resist what already is?
That's true.
It's human madness.
Hmm.
And we all do it all the time. It's easy thing to think about is like the weather.
Yeah.
Have you resisted the weather?
Yeah.
We live in Sweden, so we are granted to resist a little bit at least. I would say. But no, but it's just and then you resist your own thoughts, you resist your own emotions, you resist your partner, you resist your colleagues. I mean, we resist so much. And the funny thing is that the resistance doesn't help. I think that's when you really see it, because you need to see it and feel it and experience it. When you see resistance doesn't do anything except that we whine about it.
Yeah, because we're not actually changing anything in that moment. We're just upset that it's not different than it is.
Yes.
So it's not actually this thing where you go like, okay, I'm not happy with things the way they are right now. I'm going to plan for having it different the next time or changing something. As you say, with the weather, we're just like, I don't... And it's funny because my three-year-old, he once told me when we were outside, it's raining, Mom. I was like, yeah, it's raining. Make it stop. And I'm like, I appreciate that you believe in me, but yeah, I can't do that. Can't make it stop.
I thought that was a good metaphor for our own minds. Like, I mean, that's how at least my mind works. Like, oh, you should make it stop the rain or whatever it might be. So, and really also when I speak about it, I want to make the point because this is an exploration of life, I would say. And just to bring with you the question, okay, what happens when I don't resist? What happens when I allow everything to be? Can I be more creative? Can I be more constructive? Can I find better solutions?
Mm.
How is my experience? For example, I mean, it's so simple, but with the rain metaphor, okay, well, perhaps we can put on some rain clothes or use an umbrella.
Yeah.
And it's problem solved. I prefer sunny, but now it's raining, and also seeing, okay, well, can I change the situation? Because there are so many situations that we are in that we actually can't change. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, have the wisdom and the courage to see, oh, wait a minute, perhaps I can change the situation, and then do that. Or are there other situations that, wait a minute, the only way I can accept the situation is to leave it.
Mm.
And that's also fine. So for me, resistance is, first of all, the classical what you resist persists is just a truth of life, of the human mind. So what we resist, it really persists. It just piles up. It becomes bigger and stronger.
Is that because we focus on it?
That's a good question.
Where does it come from that it persists? Is it because we give it too much importance in our world?
Probably. It's probably in terms of the in your own experience that when you're not allowing it to be as it is, it just loops back to you in a way. So I think most of us have a relationship where we get annoyed by something, even if it's our partner or our mother or father, like we can get annoyed at other people in our relationships. So when we get annoyed, it just loops back to us, doesn't it?
Mm.
So for example, I have this thing that I had for so many years with my wife that I can be a little bit annoyed that she doesn't pick up the dishwashing machine.
Classic.
It's a classic. And then when I kind of like, when I resist that, when I resist what she's doing, it just loops back.
Yeah.
And it only creates suffering to myself. But then in periods when I'm kind of like, ah, whatever, it's okay. I can pick it up. If it's so important, let me pick it up. And it's just like, it's gone. It's no more problem. So, and I also think in terms of the human experience in terms of our internal life with our feelings, if we can't allow our feelings to be as they are, or our thoughts to be as they are, they also seem to be suppressed and come back. But when we fully allow our feelings to be the way they are, and in order to allow them to be how they are, we have to be fully present with them. So speaking what we spoke of in the beginning, like we really need to feel it. And that hurts.
Mm.
But I love the expression, meditation makes stuff hurt more, but you suffer less. Because then they can go through. They don't loop back. They're done.
So they are a bit like children then, because they want to get noticed when they're upset, and they want to get validated that they are upset, and then they usually calm down.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's it's true.
So if we could put like one mental skill into the tap water and just disperse it to everyone, which one do you think would have a lot of impact? If it would just be dispersed to everyone.
Wow. Wow. I mean, if we people could get into the tap water, the capacity to see a thought as a thought, I think that would be the biggest game changer. Because that is the kind of root to so much. I think that would be the biggest thing, but that's a kind of capacity. And I think in terms of, if it would be more a kind of an attribute or kind of a mental skill that we had, perhaps I'm thinking here between kindness and acceptance.
Mm.
And probably acceptance first, I would say. Probably acceptance first. But I mean, the skill to be able to see your thoughts as thoughts would be, yeah, that would be amazing for a society. And that's that's one way what we are trying to learn in meditation as well.
And sometimes when I talk to people about meditation and acceptance, I get this, I've had from several people, the response that, well, if you're just content, and if you just accept, and if you're just happy in the moment as it is, don't you lose your drive? Don't you lose your momentum? Don't you lose your progress? Like, I want to feel like I suck because then I can become better. I want to feel this strain in order to have, this is my drive for progress. And I've heard a lot of people say that they feel like acceptance is just going to make you numb and go like, yeah, everything is fine. I don't need anything else.
Mm.
So I think people might sometimes be a bit scared of it.
Mm. Yeah, I can see where it comes from. And I would also make a difference to allowing everything to be as it is has nothing to do with wanting to achieve whatever you want to achieve, nothing to do creating a better world. It's really just about to reduce the inner resistance to what is.
Mm.
And as you said in the beginning, when you first asked me about this, because when you resist something, that takes energy.
Mm.
It's draining to resist. So that energy you can instead put into whatever you want to do. So I would say that's the first thing. And then if you're content all the time, yeah, of course, I would put it like this. We could, and this is more of an existential question, is that it can be quite interesting to see, okay, all these kind of drives and impulses that we human have, what are, like, why? We can ask ourselves, why do I want to do this?
Mm-hmm.
And see also, what is this impulse? What is this drive? What is it leading to? Is it leading to what I really want? Or is this also unconscious that I have this idea that I have to go here in the future because, or is it something that I really, really want? And for me, what I kind of experience is that the more I love everything to be and accept everything, the more content I am. The drive doesn't really go away, but it changes. So for me, it changes the more content I am, the happier I am, the more allowing and acceptance I feel. It changes to from only having the perspective of how can I be happy to how can I be of service.
Mm.
So the kind of intention and drive doesn't really disappear, but it changes a little bit in terms of... So for example, when one of the experiences many people have when they meditate is this kind of freedom. Because you sense that, wait a minute, I had all these issues and now I realize it was actually a lot of thoughts I had about myself. And that kind of sense like, nice, like, okay, it's this sense of freedom. And that's a sense you want to share, but it can be something else. Perhaps you're into, as you are working in science and trying to discover things that can be beneficial for humankind. And that kind of drive that I don't have to do it, but I really want to do it.
Mm.
Because I want to be part of creating this amazing world that we can have together in the future. So for me, the drive just, I would say when I'm content and happy and when I accept everything to be as it is, my drive changes from being, I have to do this in order to succeed or in order to be happy later, to a more, I'm part of this planet. I also want to contribute. I also want to contribute to other people's happiness and love and, yeah.
So you don't necessarily lose momentum. You just shift where you're moving a bit.
Yeah, especially when you tap into that kind of more, that drive. And I would even say that when you tap into that drive, really what you really, really want and that kind of, that sense of like, yeah, this is something I want to contribute to. For me, the drive even goes up.
Because what's tricky about it is the things that we really want, sometimes it's based on fear. We really want something that society is telling us that we should have because we want to feel accepted or we want to feel loved or we want to be part of a certain group. We want to be successful or whatever. And we're so sure that this is something that we want. I want to do this for myself, but it might actually come from a source of anxiety.
Yeah.
So self-awareness, how do you think that kind of plays into all of this?
Yeah, this is a great question. And this is something we all need to figure out. Where does it come from?
Mm.
Is it a fear or is it something that I truly want? And to be honest with you, I don't have any great answer to that because it's more the self-awareness in terms, the self-awareness I speak about is more getting in tune and in line with what is what? And for me, I would say the difference comes from, okay, what does my mind say as also? So what kind of thoughts do I have? To a more of a silent knowing.
Mm.
A knowing that's also connected to your whole body. So it feels like the whole system of yourself knows rather than just a mind.
A felt understanding.
Yeah, more of a sense. Yeah, felt understanding. It resonates with you. That's the word I would use. You feel it. And sometimes it just goes completely against everything you believe in. And that's the problem, right? It's not rational at all. It kind of like, huh, whoa. And that can also create a kind of fear. Because in one way, can kind of afford yourself to want this, and then you were striving for this, and then you, when you stop and reflect and really listen, aha, uh-huh, okay.
And then you can feel bad for wanting something else.
Yeah, but then this is also interesting, because when you feel bad of wanting something else, I would say that's another sub-personality kicking in and saying like...
You're like, wait, hey, you should stick with this one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
How do you think we can work on bringing things from our subconscious to more our conscious thought, to understand a bit more this, what is it that I actually truly want and for what reasons they are? Because often I think it's buried quite deeply.
Yeah, to perhaps make it a bit more pragmatic and easier, I would say that most of us are really living in our heads. Like we plan and we think a lot, we use our rational and logical mind a lot. So I would say one thing that has really helped me is to contemplate. And to contemplate on a question is in one way to meditate on the question, to bring one question and sit with it. And don't get up straight away. And just listen to the different thoughts. And you usually have your plus and minuses.
Mm.
And what I usually also do is that I try to bring my experience and my kind of awareness into the body and into the upper chest area.
Okay.
So the Buddhists, they call it bodhicitta.
Mm-hmm.
And the bodhicitta means kind of a heart presence. Okay. So in a way that you engage or you try to have your awareness here in your middle of the chest. So you feel the sensations and you feel the space and you kind of sense from here more. As just like in a, this is just your direct experience I'm speaking about now. And then you quite easy can notice like, oh, wait a minute. Now all my attention is back in the head, different thoughts.
Mm.
And like an elevator, actually, you can use, you can bring it down to the heart area. And then you sit with a question and then see if it kind of resonates with you. I would say that's the way that works for me.
You keep asking yourself a question while trying to be present, while trying to...
Yes. And just allowing everything that comes up to come up. And then see if... And sometimes, like... And this is also very important, that a lot of the times to be content and to understand that the question, I don't know, is super valid.
Mm.
Because how many times in our lives, we don't know. We don't know yet. It's not matured yet. We don't know. We will know when we know, but not before that. And that's it's a cliche, but it's true.
Yeah.
So to also have the courage to say to yourself, I don't know, because that's okay. I think we want to have an answer. We want to know, but so many times we don't know.
Yeah, I think there is something about not knowing that can be really stressful and scary to people. How do you do to rest in it? Do you manage to rest in it and actually appreciate it enough?
I would lie to you if I said I did it all the times. Mm-hmm. I have my triggers. I have my stuff that I find more difficult to not know. To, I don't know if it's the right word, faith, but more patience or even allowance, perhaps is the right word, that I will know when I will know. So no, I can't always rest in the not knowing. But for me, the not knowing is also in terms of just the experience of not knowing. When I fully accept that I actually don't know, that gives me also a sense of ease. Because to always know what's right and wrong and where I'm heading, where I'm going, what is this, what is that, it's quite stressful. And that's a more of a realization. It's not that I'm faking, it's more of, wait a minute, I actually don't know. There are so many things in this life I have no clue about. I thought I had, but really I don't. And that's a truth. And when I come in contact with that truth, it's kind of a sense of ease and a freedom. And isn't it also that we people want to control things? As you mentioned a lot of times, like bending reality, we want to control stuff. And of course, when we realize we don't control that much, we don't know that much, it can be a bit scary, but it can also be freeing in that sense that we can let go of that need to control that much, of that need to know everything. Because for me personally, that opens up the experience of actually being here, of not always having to be in my mind, so instead I can experience what's going on. And that's usually much, much richer, usually much, much more pleasant in a way than to always know. But of course, like what we can discover in meditation and in life, you don't have to meditate, because as you said, like death is something that we all will encounter. But it's this, okay, I don't know and I'm afraid. Okay, but can you allow that to be? What happens with the experience when you just allow that to be? Okay, yeah, it sounds like the most human thing. Like, I don't know and I'm afraid, and okay.
That's okay.
Yeah, that's okay.
So, for a final question, what do you feel optimistic about?
Human progress. I feel very optimistic about human progress in terms of how the mind works, how we people get caught, how we people feel separated. And my optimism comes from your kind of, where you sit in your chair, from the science part, that science is just like having this amazing capacity to explore different kind of spiritual schools and traditions, wisdom teachers, both female and male, that's alive and here and more can look into the human experience from first-hand perspective and find ways so we can bring it into society in a more natural way. So I'm very optimistic that in perhaps 20 or 30 years' time, mental health will be viewed just as important as physical health. And I think we're not in the beginning anymore. I think we are actually in the middle. And that kind of the amount of research that is going on in terms of practices of love and kindness and awareness and allowing and acceptance is just amazing. So I feel very optimistic that my children and their children will live in a world where we have even better tools and a better understanding of the human mind, how we can reduce suffering and increase happiness, well-being, and love.
And thank you to you for being part of that as well, with the app and with the work you do.
Thank you.
And with the book you wrote as well.
Thank you.
It's been so great to have you here for this first little episode. It was really just chill and nice to sit and talk to you. So thank you.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.